Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We appreciate you joining us. Sarah Gonzalez is going to do that as well. She's going to join us to talk about her victory over drag shows for children in Texas, which is not a thing you should have to be victorious over, but she was. We'll tell you the story. The Supreme Court is taking on a major case, which I think you're going to care about. We'll see what's pending there a little bit later on in the program. We're going to start, though, by doing the Democrat Civil War, which apparently is ongoing. Let me get you to the latest on the shutdown. The Senate has approved the bill to end the shutdown, sending it to the House. 41-day shutdown could last a few more days as members of the House, which have been at recess since mid-September, return to Washington to vote on the legislation. President Trump has signaled support for the bill, saying Monday, we're going to be opening up our country very quickly. Also, Chuck Schumer is the one kind of in the political crosshairs, if you will, on this situation because he's getting blame for it. Now, excuse me. What's fascinating about all of that is he actually voted against opening up the government again, I think the 15th time. It's a bunch of moderates that decided to move on that. And of course, the rumor behind the scenes, you might say, like, well, why is he getting blamed for this? It's a good question. Of course, you also have to understand Chuck Schumer is not an honest broker in any way and therefore would lie to you constantly about whether he approved of this or not. This came out in Axios today, or apparently, as is otherwise known, the Schumer Post. It's scoop. Schumer privately fought to extend government shutdown. Sure he did. Yeah, of course he did. Obviously, that he was in private. He was doing that. The source on that, I believe, is Chuck Schumer, totally random whistleblower who wanted to make sure you knew that Chuckles was working hard behind the scenes to please his base, even though he never really harangued, seemingly, these moderates, if you will, that came around to opening up the government. Now, look. It's important for you to understand a fundamental principle of this show, which is Chuck Schumer should never be defended for any reason. So I'm not defending Chuck Schumer here. He's absolutely awful. I mean, and he should have resigned long ago for putting cheese on an uncooked burger on his grill. Like, that's enough for him to resign. This is a totally different story. This whole thing is happening, of course, because Chuck Schumer wanted to protect Chuck Schumer. He decided to be, I'm tough on the shutdown guy, after last time when he wasn't tough on the shutdown and got beat up from his left flank. There's rumors now of the AOCs of the world challenging him for his seat. They want to throw him out of leadership. And so that's what they were doing at the very beginning of all of this. And there was a secondary motivation of the blue state elections in 2025. We kind of went through that a little bit yesterday. One of the reasons, of course, that the left says they were fighting for the shutdown was health care. Of course, that's the one thing they did not fight for at all. That's not what they were doing at all. Had nothing to do with health care. They all claimed it had to do with health care, but of course it had nothing to do with health care whatsoever. And what this has kind of created is this fission inside of the Democratic Party. A civil war of sorts is breaking out, where you have the far left, who was very much into the idea of this shutdown, knowing eventually the Democrats would have to fold on it. Schumer trying to avoid that pressure from the left and saying, first of all, going along with the shutdown, and secondarily, acting as if he's fighting against reopening the government while still trying to stick to what he really probably wants, which is to open the government. He certainly doesn't worry about spending and thinks he can get political points by foisting this ridiculous health care issue on the Republicans. It's a bunch of theater. We talked about this yesterday. You know, you think of the blocking in the theater, like you need to move here, and then you need to move here, and then you guys both need to stand this way and face this way. That is what this is. This is all a big kind of setup. But it is also something being utilized by the far left of the party, trying to take people like, you know, the Pelosis and the Schumers out of power forever. Gavin Newsom is coming in and chiming in on this as well. He says, I thought our immune system was woken up last Tuesday with the American elections, Newsom said, referring to the wins in New York City and Virginia and New Jersey. I worry now, though, that it sounds like some of my colleagues and friends in the U.S. Senate, some of my Democratic colleagues, just decided that we're playing by the old set of rules. God, he is awful. If this guy wins, if he wins the nomination and becomes president of the United States, we're a lost cause. Let's be honest about it. If you fall for the Gavin Newsom fake, slick, serial killer vibe, what do we... Ed Gein would be a better president. It's just... Ro Khanna says Schumer is no longer effective and should be replaced. If you can't lead the fight to stop healthcare premiums from skyrocketing Americans, what will you fight for? Of course, Ro Khanna also knows they were never getting that. Never was happening. But they all get to say the things that they want to say. It's a nice big piece of theater for you. Community theater, crap theater. Theater that with really terrible actors and awful scripts. Schumer, also being talked about by David Axelrod, he says, I think he's been in trouble. I think he's in bigger trouble now. Anderson Cooper asked if Schumer was in trouble here with the left flank. Schumer has been in there since 1982, he continued. My guess is that he won't be leader of the party in 2027 after this election and something really surprising happens. Let me just give you, I was six in 1982. Six. This is the year, we're talking about a year, I believe, might have been 82. It's 82 or 83, Rocky III came out. This is like a long time ago. You shouldn't be in office from 1982 to 2025. That's just not something that should be possible. I'm not stating anything controversial here. Every American knows this, including Chuck Schumer. But he, you know, also wants power. A bunch of progressive groups coming out against Chuck Schumer, I guess because he's too conservative. I don't know. Our Revolution is one of the groups. Never heard of them before, honestly, but they're a progressive group. For Chuck Schumer. They want him to resign. MoveOn.org, which is, again, shouldn't we have, if we're going to have term limits on senators, we should also have them on dumb progressive groups like MoveOn.org, a group that literally came into existence because they wanted the media to move on from the Monica Lewinsky scandal. They're still around, still called Move On. Maybe they should move on. I'm just throwing that out there. They say they want Schumer to step aside as well. And look, as you embrace these far-left people, and that's what a lot of them are, so of course Chuck Schumer is too. I mean, let's be honest about this. This is not like some big difference between the far, far left and Chuck Schumer. He's part of the far left. But you put leftists in charge, and you get these policies, and these policies are not just stories that we do on this stupid show. They're actually real ideas, real policies that affect actual people. Let me give you an example of this, because these are not just stories. These are real things with real consequences. Let me give you some recent developments in this world. Mamdani's minimum wage hike will hurt young workers most, says the City Journal. Santa Fe City Council decided on minimum wage hike that has faced mixed reactions. Not Washington's minimum wage going up to $17.13 in 2026. Portland approving a $19 minimum wage. Maryland putting a $25 an hour minimum wage to vote in 2026. Make you nervous at all? Because we've heard this story before, right? We've all talked about this before. We remember the big, California is putting in a $15 minimum wage for fast food workers. Remember this story from a while ago? And what happens is we kind of like have these stories hit us and we don't ever revisit them. Whatever happened to that? Everything went swimmingly, I assume, right? Not quite. Now, the minimum wage is a complicated story because politicians like it because it seems like they're just giving away free money to people without giving away free money to people. Number one is just the giveaway principle. Number two, though, is that it's a very well-tested policy that does pretty good in the polls. I mean, it's something like 80% of people support a minimum wage hikes almost at any level. Like, they don't like... Like, if you tested a $25 minimum wage, it wouldn't do nearly that well. But if you raise it and just say you want it higher and don't tell them what it is, they always want it higher. So if you have it at $19, they're fine with it being higher. And that's because, you know, look, partially the internal good of the American people who say, hey, I want people maybe on the lower income scale to do better. Like, I want the best for them. And, you know, if they can make a couple bucks extra an hour, that's not going to break anybody. It's no big deal. And it'll help them. And I get that sentiment. I really do. I understand it. In fact, you might think the minimum wage should be higher. The problem with it, of course, is what happens when the policy is actually put into place. Reason has this story out of that going back and saying, hey, maybe we should look at what happened here. April 1st, 2024, California raised its minimum wage from $16 to $20 an hour for fast food workers employed at chains with more than 60 locations nationwide. This is from the NBER working paper. Our median, this is the National Bureau of Economic Research, in case you're not a complete nerd. Our median estimate suggests that California lost about 18,000 jobs that would have been retained if AB 1228 had not been passed. 18,000 jobs gone. Thomas Sowell made this point a long time ago. The actual minimum wage is zero. You can tell everybody there's a minimum wage, but when it gets too high and they fire you, you have $0 per hour. That's the actual minimum wage. Prior to passage of AB 1228, the bill hiking the minimum wage, fast food employment, was rising faster in the state and elsewhere than elsewhere in the country. Allowing for that, for changes in the overall labor market, they estimated the real decline in California's fast food employment at 3.6% to arrive at 18,000 lost jobs. In September, the EPI, Employment Policies Institute, drew on U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics to estimate that 15,988 fast food jobs had been lost since the law went into effect in April 2024. They say it's 3.3% of jobs lost, more than double the losses in fast food restaurants nationally since September 2023. That EPI memo built on a November 2024 study that found that more than 4,400 California fast food jobs have been lost since January. That study also found 10.1% menu price increases by April 24 since the law's passage in 2023. So, you know, the numbers are a little bit varying, 16,000, 18,000. But the bottom line is, you know, roughly 17,000 people who would have had jobs in the industry don't have those jobs. Now, given that the fact that this is at the lower end of the income scale, the lower, you know, the beginning of an arc of a career, most of those people probably didn't work at all and probably are on some government program. That's not the only effect, of course. You also have people and their families that are affected. You have people, you have their careers that are slowed down. You have all sorts of developments that are negative there, but also it increased prices for people who just want to eat a couple tacos or cheeseburgers, right? It's increasing the prices for people going to the fast food restaurants and then taking the people who worked at the fast food restaurants and removing them from those jobs. Now, were there a couple people who may have had their minimum wage increased a couple of bucks an hour? Sure, there probably were. But at a massive, massive cost to thousands and thousands of people in California. A February 2025 paper from the Berkeley Research Group said the fast food sector lost 10,700 jobs between June 2023 and 2024, declined sharply, contrast with the sector's historically compounded annual growth of 2.5%, marks the only December year-to-year over decline in fast food employment this century, including the Great Recession, excluding the Great Recession and COVID. So we took a relatively, you know, certainly compared to the Great Recession and COVID, a relatively positive economic time and made it as bad as those periods. The worst period since those things actually happened. The first time it's been negative in all of that existence, except for those two periods. That report also found menu prices at fast food restaurants increased by 14.5%. Now, again, there are people like me that go to fast food restaurants all the time and could probably afford food that's better than the food that they get at fast food restaurants. That being said, not going to stop me from going there. Look at me, I'm a fat blob. And that's important to understand because I will pay pretty much any price for fast food. But the people who are typically going to fast food restaurants are people either in just a rush, which of course happens, but also people who are on the lower income scale and saying, hey, I can get some hot food, I can get it quick, I might not have all the ingredients and cooking facilities I need to make some healthy meal at home, I'm gonna go grab something at the fast food store. This is gonna, you know, like, it's the type of thing that doesn't make us necessarily the healthiest nation in the world. But it is good that there's plentiful food available for people who maybe can't afford more. Jacking up their prices by 14.5% to help a select few while costing people tens of thousands of jobs is really, really bad. California fast food restaurants also increased automation and technology adoption to offset rising labor costs, the BRG paper found. Therefore, it should not be surprising the number of employees per restaurant is declining. Think about the time we're in right now. You have AI around the corner. You have automation going on. You know, when's the last time, if you go to McDonald's four, five, six times a day like I do, when's the last time you talk to a McDonald's employee? You just pressing buttons on a screen. That's what's going on. It's not a good environment. And like a lot of this stuff was going to happen anyway, eventually. But what you're doing is you're making all of this stuff happen faster. You're taking away a generation's ability to exercise their work ethic at the base of the career scale. You know, my first job was at a McDonald's, literally at a McDonald's. And, you know, was I a good employee? No, but did I understand what I was doing? Sometimes. And it was able to build the very basis of a career, showing up every day, helping people, being polite to them, even when you were really annoyed and didn't want to be polite to them, going to make sure that when they complained, you actually were able to handle those complaints and say, okay, hey, sure, let me get the manager, or whatever the case is. These are basic job skills that you use over a lifetime, and those opportunities are being eliminated from so many people's lives. That's not healthy. The law established a fast food council, which has the power to further increase wages every year by the lesser of 3.5% or inflation. The council is supposed to hold public meetings no less than every 6 months, but the last meeting was back in February. The position of the chair is currently vacant. Finally, if creating prosperity was as easy as passing another law, we'd all be rich. But laws, more often than not, get in the way of jobs, businesses, and building wealth. Passing legislation is no substitute for the hard work of hard work. To create prosperity, you have to come up with ideas, produce goods and services, match buyers and sellers, and keep everybody reasonably satisfied. Now, that's just one breakdown from Reason, but, you know, they cite many, many studies in there. This was consistent among really all the research. And what is the fallout of a policy like that? You put left-wing people in office and they do these types of things. What happens? Well, 18,000 people lose their jobs. And those 18,000 people don't have the fundamental building blocks of a career. Those 18,000 people are out of work. They're struggling. They don't have money. If they have families, they're struggling to support them. Then they go to get something to eat at a fast food restaurant, and prices are 14% higher. And they have to deal with that. And they become more and more dependent on government. This is a story that's happening all over the country. This is just one example of a left-wing policy and how it echoes throughout our communities. And it does. It lasts a very long time. You're setting back these families by years at a time, trying to gather that same job experience so they can move on throughout their careers. And you think about last time, I mean, you know, with AI and the changes that are coming between AI and robotics and automation and all these things, we are already in a situation where it's challenging for younger people to come up through our communities and become the people that are the backbone of a society. And we're killing that future for them because of left-wing policies. And at the end of this, what's really, really annoying to me personally as a conservative is we sit here and we warn about these things. And then left-wing people get elected in places like California. They put them in. Exactly what we say is going to happen actually happens. It all plays out the way we talk about it in advance. And then what happens? These people are out of work. They need help. They go to the government. The government gives them a bunch of money, and then that money runs out. They need even more money, and then they come to us and say, well, you can't deny them more money because capitalism is so mean. Is it? Is it capitalism causing these problems? Is it? Because I don't think that's true. You want a country like North Korea, you can go there, and they exist. There's plenty of them out there. I guess you can get an assigned job, and you can deal with all that. But instead, maybe we embrace capitalism a little bit more. Maybe instead of running away from it all the time, we run toward it. And, you know, they write the policy that kill the jobs. And then these people are out of work. And then they come and they complain and they say, we need something else. And who's to step in? But of course, it's the government. And the government comes in and then they say, hey, well, what we'll do is we'll have another giant program that will give you more money in another area. And then on and on and on and on and on. This cycle of constant growth in our government is so difficult to disassemble. I swear, like, I've been talking about this for so long, and I feel like I'm just on a roller coaster ride that never stops. We just keep going around and around, around the track, and back to the beginning, and we keep slowing down, and we look over there, and we say, oh, gosh, is this the time we get off? And no, we don't. We just keep going around and around and around and around. And every single time, government grows a little bit more. They create the problem. They design the solution. that solution fails, and then their solution for the next time after that failed solution is another government solution where they get more money and more power and they have to dish it out another way. It is, I mean, we've done the circle of grift before, and this is a good example of it. It's a constant pressure for larger government. And, you know, I was talking about this with Glenn on the radio today, and it's so frustrating because this happened with healthcare, right? Obamacare gets passed. We say it's going to fail. We say it's going to make prices go up. We say it's going to be a disaster. We say, you know, these risk pools aren't going to work out the way they're saying, and you are going to lose your insurance. People do lose their insurance. All these things come true. And then what does the conversation become? Number one, we have an idea of whether we should go back to Obamacare Classic or go to new Obamacare, which just has even more money on top of it for people making $100,000 a year getting help from the government for their health insurance. More money, more subsidies. Oh, increase. Give me the increased COVID subsidies and then we'll continue them forever. And if not, you have to take the right-wing position of Obamacare. How does this happen? And then, of course, the people who brought you the crappy solution last time are here to design the new one this time. It is agonizing. It really is. It's tiring. Frankly, it's hard to sometimes just get in the middle of this stuff and you're like, God, how does this happen? It's the same story over and over and over again. And we keep having this echo to grow government, to grow centralized power. And we don't even get that chance to like, hey, let's try the free market solution. Let's see what happens. It almost never occurs. It's really, really frustrating. Now, occasionally you can make a difference. Some people do. Not me. But some people do. Like our own Sarah Gonzalez. She's made a difference right here in Texas in a big way. And she's going to talk with us about it next. You know how hard it is these days to find anything that's actually made here in America? You look at a tag, it's like you're taking a geography quiz. Bangladesh, Vietnam, Honduras, where are these places? Anywhere but here. And that's why I love American Giant. They make everything right here in the USA. American-grown cotton, American mills, American workers. It is the real deal, and it shows the second you put it on. You're going to love their stuff. I mean, this is... I have a bunch of it. It's great. You know, their clothes are ridiculously well made. They're not like just good for the price. They're just good. Every hoodie, the T-shirts they have, the jackets that feel like, you know, something you've had for years instead of months. It's the opposite of the fast fashion crap that you order from foreign countries that shows up. It's like costs like $1.97. And it is, you know, it arrives like 6 months later. Very, very strange process. The classic hoodie from American Giant is legendary. The bomber jacket is turning heads. And right now, to honor veterans, American Giant's giving the Blaze audience 30% off everything on their site. 30% off right now. It's a big deal. By the way, great time to buy something for Christmas that's coming up. Get ahead of this stuff. It's a great excuse to upgrade your wardrobe as well. Go to their website. It's American-Giant.com. American-Giant.com. If you use the code THEBLAZE, you'll get 30% off. It's American-Giant.com. The offer code is THEBLAZE. Today only, by the way. They're doing this just one day here. 30% off right now at American-Giant.com actually, with the offer code THEBLAZE. Check it out now.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
I'm just talking to Sarah Gonzalez off the air and just with the crazy moment we're in right now. Sarah, of course, is president of the Texas Family Project, host of Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered right here on Blaze TV. And we love having her on. And Sarah, of course, is like, I should be like, I do a stupid show here. And Sarah then does actual work. Like she goes out there and does make an actual difference. Like we're not the same. I love you for that because you're a much harder worker and are able to achieve things. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to correct for our actual president, Brady Gray. It is Madam Vice President.
Sorry, Madam Vice
Texas
President.
Family.
I apologize.
I didn't want him to think I was trying to take his job.
No, that's true. a power play, just another conservative power play in effect. Actually, you did something really amazing and were involved in this. Was this with the Texas Family Project?
Yes. Yeah.
So to explain the law that has been put into effect and, you know, how we got there.
Yes. So there was a law that was actually passed in 2023. I believe it's been several years tied up in the courts. That was SB. We passed that year. We passed SB 12 and SB 14. And what they did were, of course, the anti-child mutilation bill. Which is,
you know, why do you need a law for that?
I know. Right? It's so controversial these days to say, hey, maybe doctors shouldn't be mutilating children's body parts or sterilizing an entire generation. Maybe let's not do that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so it was that bill, and then it was the, how shall I put it? The detractors would call it a drag show ban.
Okay.
I would agree, but I would also say it was not written to just ban drag queens from performing in front of kids. It was a law that said adults may not perform sexually explicit performances in front of minors.
And of course, that was the way the law was written, right? Like it said that. So when they're saying it's a drag show bill, they're kind of like admitting
they're
something, aren't they?
Definitely telling on themselves.
Yes. Like,
but if you guys are saying it's a drag show ban, maybe you guys are the ones who are performing sexually in front of children. We should look into that.
Yeah.
So so that bill was tied up in the courts for several years. Of course, you know, the ACLU and a bunch of grown men, you know, dressing up as women sued. And so we waited and we waited and we waited and we finally got word from the Fifth Court of Appeals that they have rescinded the lower court's stay on it. And so the law now can go into effect.
And so the law basically very, very simply mm-hmm. just says, hey, try not to have sex in front of kids.
Yeah.
Okay, no, it's just a little recommendation from us.
Yeah. Which again is like weird to be on the side of wanting to very much perform like that in front of young children.
Yeah.
Very strange behavior. But luckily, you know, they were defeated. And now in the state of Texas, we will not have all ages sexually explicit drag shows. Now, I'm not saying, Stu, that they're not going to try to push, you know, push the boundaries and skirt over the line and find out where the line is. Mm-hmm. But at least we now have a law on the books, a mechanism by which we can point to and say, actually, you may not do this. Mm-hmm. So.
And this isn't something that, because I think a lot of people hear, you know, oh gosh, drag shows, was it a story, Drag Time Story Hour was a big conversation point a couple years ago. And like, there are probably some efforts in this area that might not even trigger this law. Mm-hmm. You've been to many shows that would, though.
Yes.
Like you've actually uncovered evidence that this is not just the, oh, they're just people who dress in drag and read stories.
Correct.
This is much farther than that. And you've seen the evidence.
Oh, 100%.
You've been at the shows.
Yes. I mean, I have been sitting in the middle of a restaurant during a drag brunch where it looks like I'm at a strip club rather than a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And there are young children all nearby. There's sexually explicit songs that are playing, songs that if I were to play, you know, on your show or my show, we'd have to bleep out every other word because it's just all, you know, the P word and the F word and all this. They're selling, they're giving away sex toys at some of these as part of their event, you
and
know?
Kids I are mean, there.
Yes, right there.
Not I mean, just like,
right there.
It's not just, oh, well, it's all ages, but kids actually are coming.
Kids are coming.
With their parents? With their parents?
Kids are coming with, usually it's just a woman, right?
Yeah.
Usually not a ring on her finger, like just a single white woman who, let's just be honest, is mentally ill. and so it's been a lot of those. It's the overwhelming majority that I go to. They always find a way to make it sexual, and they always involve the child. They claim, the drag queens are like, well, we can't help it if parents take their kids to these. It's not our fault. Don't hate us. And it's like, well, I mean, it is kind of your fault that you call them out at every show that I've been to. You comment on how cute they are. Mm-hmm. You know, you thank them when they tip you, and you, like, you involve them in your show. So,
was it one of your videos? I feel like I saw one of your videos where they actually had a kid put money in, like, a G-string type of situation.
Yes.
Like, I mean, that's crazy.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that happens often with this. So, you know, it's been going on for quite some time now. It's really honestly disturbing that we have to have a law that spells this out.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's where we are. That's where we were in 2023. That's where we are now. And I am quite confident that now that we have this law, we will be able to crack down on these sickos, these grown men perverts who think that it's appropriate to dance like that and perform like that in front of young children.
Let me just broaden this for one quick second. You mentioned restaurants. I was talking to a friend of mine who said he went to a sports bar recently that had just opened up in our area. And he described it as a sports bar in which all the waitresses were dressed in lingerie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I actually like women in lingerie. It's I think it's wonderful. But like, not really around food. I just feel like the restaurant is not the place for that. I feel is that possible? Just
I know.
Can we add something onto this rule?
I have the same request. It does feel a little unsanitary.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to eat steak and eggs in front of a stripper.
Yes. Just more clothing. Like let's separate the food thing and naked thing.
Yeah. Listen, if people have to wear hairnets when they cook in a kitchen to be sanitary, I feel like probably clothes.
Yes. I'm glad I'm not alone on this one because I don't understand. Okay, I want to address this as well because this is our girl, Jasmine Crockett. I know we both love her.
Besties,
do I still have the shirt? Honestly. I think I have got the shirt down here somewhere. Where is it?
Jasmine Crockett merch?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you'll like it.
How do I not have Jasmine Crockett?
I don't know. You should have it. Jasmine Crockett 28. And it says, and then, smaller print. It says, for Democratic nominee and nothing else. Or you're a racist.
Or you're a racist.
Yes. So you can get these at stewdoesmerch.com. I got to get you one.
Please. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Because I really want her to run for office all the time.
Yes,
I want her constantly running and not winning. I want her running and losing. I want her to be the new Beto.
Right. Yes. Running and running her mouth on social media.
Yes.
Please do that all the time.
More of Jasmine Crockett.
Yes.
And we're apparently not alone. Here, because we have these photos. This is a progressive radio host by the name of Stephanie Miller, I believe. And she is there. Yes, Stephanie Miller. And she says, why, yes, I did kiss the sneakers of Jasmine Crockett. And I do worship the ground she walks on. And she was lovely about it. And it has the photos here. Let's, you can go through these and see what happened.
Oh, now, no.
If someone did that to you, wouldn't you stop them immediately?
100. I would not allow that.
Especially if you saw people with cameras.
That is a terrible, terrible disaster for optics.
Yes, just absolutely
also,
awful.
Again, not sanitary.
No. Keep your mouth away from feet, if at all possible. But I do think it's there's a strange culture, and I think it's actually really positive for conservatives that the left-wing internet media, the left-wing media ecosphere seems to reward the most insane people and the people that we would want them to identify as the face of their movement.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and they're doing this really weird thing where they say that you're in a cult if you like that President Trump has, I don't know, like closed the border and deported criminals. Mm-hmm. You must be in a cult. But then they are literally kissing the feet of a political, a congresswoman. Mm-hmm. And talking about how she worships her. It's very scary behavior,
yes.
Very, very strange behavior. And I guess we shouldn't, we should expect it from a party that has completely lost religion. I mean, this is their religion now. I actually think it's perfectly representative of the Democrat Party. Like this, politics is their religion. Being a Democrat is their religion.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, when you lose God, you have to latch on to something.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you need something. You need a core that tells you where you need to go. And if it's not God, you got to replace it with something. And this is, I guess, what they've chosen.
I suppose that's how you land in a place like, Queers for Palestine.
Yes. Right?
Like, these aren't coherent views.
Yes.
Right? Like,
right.
It's just like this religious view that you're supposed to take whatever the progressives say you're supposed to do. And the fact that these kind of come to an intersection that doesn't make any sense is just sort of a side effect.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, I would also say that's a much longer conversation, Stu, because I would also say that is part of the red-green alliance that's going on right now with the Marxists being kind of co-opted by the Muslims and Islam.
Mm.
And Islam, I've watched on my show, Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered, we talk about this. I've played a bunch of clips of a bunch of Muslim leaders who are actually saying that the Democrats are stupid, and they know that they're stupid. And that is why they are, yes, and that is why they're convincing them, Queers for Palestine and all this, so that they can work together to destroy the West.
Wow, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. What show is this on? I have to go back and watch this because it's Mamdani in action, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. I'll send it. It was last week. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'll send it to you. It really is fascinating.
And I know Glenn's talked about it over the years too, of having like Islamists and communists and anarchists and all these groups that you wouldn't think have anything to do with each other, working together because they have common enemies, right? Like they know, basic nuclear family conservative values, yep, traditional constitutionalism, is the opposite of what they want. And they'll sort it out later.
Yep.
I think, you know, some people who have more violent tendencies always think they're going to win those battles. Mm-hmm. But that's a scary thought.
Yeah,
that this
yeah.
is going on.
Yeah, I mean, the point is the Democrat Party is too damn dumb to understand what they're doing. That's why they're worshiping the feet of Jasmine Crockett, which feet are disgusting.
You know, I tend to agree. I'm not a feet. Like, there's some people who like the foot stuff. To each your own.
Could I just please say I have a very high rating on WikiFeet, I'm told.
Do you really?
I do.
Congratulations.
So I'm not knocking people who do find feet attractive. And if you do, please rate me at WikiFeet. Mm. I'm just saying, I don't personally find feet to be at all attractive.
What percentage of the Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered audience would you say comes directly from WikiFeet? Do we know? Do we have a breakdown?
I hope it's high. I asked for a shoe cam, and I was told by management, that's going to attract the wrong viewer.
You know, do you believe this? This is typical conservative hatred. They don't even want the WikiFeet viewers here.
I want the WikiFeet viewer.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just saying.
You've built your empire on WikiFeet. Is WikiFeet seemingly what it seems to be, which would be like a Wikipedia for feet?
It literally is a Wikipedia for feet, and people find pictures of you or stills of you when you can see even the peep toe on my shoes where you can just see the toes and they upload them there.
Really?
Yes, I'll show you.
The internet should be shut down immediately. I want to take a full, firm stance on that. You know, I think back often to the James Bond movie, A View to a Kill.
Yeah.
And the plot of that movie was, wasn't it Christopher Walken was the bad guy in that? And Zorin Industries. And he put a bunch of explosives underneath San Francisco to set off an earthquake that would flood the entire Silicon Valley area. You know, maybe a second view. That's a second look at his policies. We never really took his policies seriously. We just treated him like a vision because he was like German.
Mm.
But I mean, like
in hindsight, he had something going.
Think about where this world would be if we just flooded Silicon Valley before the iPhone came out. Maybe a much better place.
He was onto something.
He would. Now, I will say a good chunk of your audience would go away from WikiFeet if that would have happened. So,
all right, then I have to fight you.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll have this debate. Conservatives can have debates like this.
Sure.
Pro-WikiFeet and anti-WikiFeet.
Yep.
We'll have that. Maybe we'll do our own tour and we'll have that conversation. Sarah Gonzalez.
Thank you.
I apologize, by the way, to the Texas Family Project for having this conversation wrapped around a great achievement. That did really good things. So I apologize to that. I apologize to the president who I misidentified Sarah as. Mm-hmm. Sarah Gonzalez, vice president of the Texas Family Project. Be sure to catch her on her Blaze TV show, Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. You can check out her WikiFeet page as well, which I'm unfortunately, several people in the audience unfortunately are now at. And I shame on you if that's you. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mundt reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
The Supreme Court said they were not going to hear a case about gay marriage. They rejected that. By the way, we told you about this at the time. There was really not a lot of appetite to overturn the Obergefell case. And the left was telling you that, you know, they were going to put all gay people in prison or something. So none of that happened. In fact, there's zero appetite. I mean, only Clarence Thomas has even indicated, like, hey, this ruling, I think, was flawed. There's no appetite for that, even though they lied to you constantly about it before. Then another case they did take up was about mail-in voting. Now, whether you like mail-in voting or not is, not really the issue here. I mean, it's not going anywhere. I have more of a sweet spot or a soft spot, I suppose, for mail-in voting than some, just because, like, I've worked in the media and have to cover elections all the time. I'm not always in the state on election day. So you're like, oh, crap, how do I vote? I've had to use absentee voting a lot. And so absentee is one level of that. I am definitely against the widespread mail out. Hey, everyone, that they didn't even ask for a ballot. Let's send one out anyway and see what happens. That's a bad idea. This, though, has to do not necessarily with mail-in voting in general, but has to do with when these votes can arrive. And like, if you send, like, for example, if you go to your mailbox and send in on election day your ballot and it gets postmarked that day, that will mainly count in most states, even if it arrives 5-6 days later. And I think Mississippi is the state in question here. It's 5 days in Mississippi. And they're talking about whether that's right. Now, I would say what is fair is, number one, it's your responsibility. If you're going to use mail-in voting, if you're going to have it, and you're gonna, it's your you know, your situation, you should mail it in early enough so it shows up, like I do with my bills, right? Like, that's what everyone does with everything else in their entire lives. They make sure they mail it in a week early or 2 weeks early to make sure it gets there in time. That's what you do in our society. Now, maybe if it would be fair, you could come up with a guaranteed by date, right? Where, like, maybe if it's October 27th, and, you know, if the election's November 4th and it's a week and a half advance or something like that, if you get it postmarked by then, if the mail screws up and it doesn't arrive and it arrives later, maybe you could argue that counts. But there's no expectation to mail out a ballot on election day and it arriving on the same day. You know it's going to be there late. Those ballots should not count. That's ridiculous. And that's what they're going to sort out, potentially, in this Supreme Court ruling. A few more stories to get to. We don't have too much time to get to them, but you need to know important news, like Christine Pelosi. She is not going to run for her mother's House seat, which, of course, she would have won because she has the last name of her mom, Pelosi. She's instead going to run for something else, which she will also win, a California State Senate seat. So that is super exciting. She's been around for a while working in, you know, Democratic circles and is now going to extend that into a very long Pelosi level. I mean, you got to have somebody who's got the inside information to trade stocks. That's important to the family and the family's future. The Democratic Party has an unlikely new power couple. Normally that means like you're dating. So I don't know if maybe Gavin Newsom and Zohran Mamdani have an announcement to make. They're together. They met each other on WikiFeet. But they're apparently together. Now, it's funny because Newsom is really at a totally different level. Mamdani is a local politician right now, and he's going to screw up a very big locality. But he is not the type of person that's necessarily going to affect your day-to-day life. Gavin Newsom might. He's by far the leader for the Democratic nomination right now. We'll see if that continues. Oscar Isaac was not so open to working with Disney after Jimmy Kimmel's suspension, said he'd return to Star Wars if Disney does not succumb to fascism. Now, of course, Disney is a far left-wing company. So absurd. These freaking actors are insane. Also, I don't think there's a huge appetite for, like, more Poe Dameron content. You know, that's the person he played in Star Wars. Now, not exactly Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker. Let's put it that way. And then finally, Kim Kardashian. She flunked the California bar exam again. She initially blamed ChatGPT and got in a fight with ChatGPT about it. Now, apparently, she's upset because four psychics swore that she'd pass the bar, and they dropped the ball. And I should note TMZ putting a crystal ball in the headline. So that's where we are now. We're that much closer to Idiocracy. But I would also state, if you can't trust four psychics, who can you trust? You know? I mean, that is like, wow, if you have four different psychics telling you something, it has to be true. It's almost as reliable a source as wikifeet.com. At least that's my understanding. So even psychics are letting us down. Okay, so here's what happened. A bunch of years ago, maybe 10 years ago or so, a bottle of beer was discovered in a garage, and it was up in the Arctic somewhere. And this particular beer was dated back to 1875. It's a 150-year-old beer from an Arctic expedition. And they're now going to open it up and crack open figure out what the formula was and recreate this beer. 9% alcohol by volume and 6 times the calories of regular beer to sustain sailors in freezing conditions. It made me think of an observation Pat Gray once made to me, which was, I like when they put calories on the menu because the higher the number is, the better the food. And so if it has 6 times the calories, that's a pretty heavy beer. but maybe it's going to be absolutely delicious and you can buy it very, very soon. So there you go. Get ready for 150-year-old beer coming to stores near you soon. Also, get ready for Blaze TV's newest show. It's now live. Rufo and Lomez, Christopher Rufo and Jonathan Lomez Keppelman. I don't know. You know who they are. Rufo and Lomez. Watch them.